Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride. In this episode, I talked to Ray Advakos, an academic librarian at the University of Toronto, about how to intentionally craft a sabbatical that supports personal growth, research breakthroughs, and even retirement planning. Ray's experience is firsthand evidence that a sabbatical can be more than just a break, but only if you plan it with intention. She shares how her sabbaticals were opportunities to reimagine routines, explore new behaviors, and make space for what truly matters. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by planning your time away or worried about losing momentum, then this episode will provide real practical insights from someone who's been there multiple times. I hope you enjoy the show. Hi, Raya. Thanks so much for being on Sabbatical 101 today. I'm really excited to hear all about your sabbaticals. Before we get started, I would love for you to introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about who you are and where you're located, and then we will dive into your sabbatical stories.
Okay. So I work for the University of Toronto Libraries. For those of you not that familiar with Canada, the University of Toronto is a public, large, research-oriented institution. We've got the largest library in Canada, and we tend to be ranked up with Harvard and Princeton, etc. So it's a very research-focused institution, and librarians are able to take sabbatical and are encouraged to take sabbaticals and do research as part of their normal duties. This is my third sabbatical, and it's probably going to be my last sabbatical, and they've all been stay-baticals. The first two have focused on the information needs and use of graduate students, and this one is actually looking at like career experiences of librarians. So it's quite different from what I've done in the past.
I know one of the reasons we connected is because you had mentioned that you have had stay-baticals and that you've really enjoyed that and leaned into that. So you're currently on sabbatical. It might be your last, but I'd love to hear you just talk a little bit about and about how you decided to make it a stay-batical. What were the factors that led to that decision?
Sure. With my first sabbatical, my children were very young. Both my daughters are now grown, but they both had learning disabilities and they were very reluctant, very resistant to switching school systems. So we listened to that. And the second sabbatical, one of them was a tweenie and one of them was a teenager. And their friend groups were really important to them. So again, we leaned into that. This time around, there's some personal stuff that I need to deal with, which is much easier to deal with in situ than it would be remotely. So I knew that I would lower my stress levels by staying here. And frankly, the technology makes it much easier now. I think in terms of structuring a sabbatical, I think I try and do things quite differently at home than if I was having a week off work. I dress differently. I organize my space differently. I organize my time differently. And that has varied from sabbatical to sabbatical. Certainly when I had children in the house, I would lean into their schedules and I would schedule my breaks and frankly, my research around their lives. And it actually made the work go much easier because then, you know when you're going to be, it's not an interruption, I guess, it's intentional. And I want to spend good quality time with my kids. And I've had to learn to build in breaks this time around since they're not around. They're grown and have places of their own.
You don't have that natural kind of
right
end point, right? The end of the school day or something
right
like that.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's so helpful to hear because many of the people I work with, and I think many people who listen to my podcast, have young kids. And so they see sabbatical as a time to spend time differently with kids. I've probably said this a million times now, but I really love how one of my clients put it. She said, I want to be able to give my kids not just what I have left over at the end of the day. So to kind of have a different energy for them, right? Sabbatical allows that flexibility. Like you said, you can schedule your work days similar to their school days so that you're ready for them when they come off the bus or need to be picked up for school, or you're there for the practices and the sports games and whatever. But then, like you said, it's a little different planning a sabbatical when you don't have any sort of natural structure in place, which is another thing people struggle with, right? And then you're kind of like, do I just fill every day with work, or how do I create a rhythm that works well for a sabbatical?
Right. One of the things I did during the sabbaticals when my kids were younger was I would do my homework with them around the kitchen table in the evening. And the homework that I did was things that were interruptible, like answering simple emails, or since I'm a librarian, doing simple lit searches. But as long as you could stay present for them and have that on the back burner, that actually helped a lot with homework resistance. And it's something that I continued when I went back to the workplace. Kids understandably do not want to do their homework often. So when we were doing it together, it made it really easier because it became the norm in the household. The other thing I did was if I knew that there was going to be a time of intense work, whether it was a conference I was going to or a deadline I was facing, or I just kind of felt like I wanted to do a sprint of work, I would schedule time in with each one of them. I had two to do something special before and after that period. And it didn't have to be big. It could be going to a movie, but that really helped.
Yeah. So having that intention so they know I'm getting mom and then she needs to be doing something else, but they kind of can feel secure that they have your full attention.
Yeah.
Before or after.
Yeah. And I had a fairly consistent routine, so they also knew what my return was. We also did do some traveling. And one of the things I did was, what worked best actually, was taking one of them. When they were teenagers, they would just come with me alone. When they were younger, I would bring my mom and I would go to my conference and they would have a mini vacation. So we would often go for about 5 or 6 days. And a few of those days I was with them and a few of those days I was with my meeting. But those were really great vacations.
Yeah. And
it actually has a very different rhythm than hauling the whole family to wherever you're going to.
I like these ways of thinking about how you can use the added flexibility you have on sabbatical to make special and different connections with your kids. So help me think about your sabbatical now. You said that, you know, now you don't have these natural constraints of kids in the house. How are you finding a balance between the work and the research you want to get done and personal pursuits or, you know, whatever you like to do that's not work related?
So I always have personal goals with sabbaticals. And in the first one, I actually had to develop them because they weren't on my radar. I just had, you know, my university sabbatical plan. With my second sabbatical, I was coming off of a major injury and I knew I had to pace myself because I still needed time to recover. With this one, I'm actually trying to decide whether I'm going to retire and when I'm going to retire. So I've been trying to lean into elements of, well, what would I do if I was retired? And I've always used part of my sabbatical to learn differently. And I tend to be a very experiential or visual learner. And I'm not a morning person, but I wake up early. So I've actually been listening to podcasts, including your own, which is great. First thing in the morning, they're a different type of information source and the way you find them and the way you assess them is different. But they're also not as intense, shall I say, or not as dense as some of the things that, for example, I read. So they work well first thing in the morning. In the past, when I had children, you know, I would do sort of low-level tasks and then I would get them off to school and I would go to the gym. So right now, I have replaced that with podcasts and then going to the gym. And then I come back and I tend to do my best work kind of midday and early evening. and I build in breaks for myself. So I will build in a 15-minute break to cook my dinner, and I will build in a 15-minute break to clean the closet, and I stick to the 15 minutes. So I have a sort of two spurts, and I have long days, but the pace, if you will, the beginning and the end, so not quite early evening, but mid-evening, I may do some more low-level tasks, or I may just be off for the day, and I'll try and do something social, or I'll read for pleasure, or something like that. So that's the way I've built in, and that has been built over the past two sabbaticals. I tend to work best in 2 or 3 hour chunks, and there's a rhythm to my energy.
Yeah, I mean, that's so important to know. And sabbatical is so great because you can really lean into that. You don't have to be in the office all day or having meetings at times that you have low energy. It's great that you've been able to identify what your ideal rhythms are and then build your day around that. That's amazing. I mean, it would be great if we could live like that all the time, right?
Right, right.
So you mentioned that with your first sabbatical, you didn't have personal goals, or you didn't realize that you could have personal goals. So how did you come to that realization? Like, tell me a little bit about that, if you can think back to that point where you said, I can have some personal goals. And how did you go about centering that or making that part of your sabbatical focus?
Well, it came naturally, I hate to say it, because about every 2 to 3 hours, I would need to take a break. And I was taking my break at the fridge, or I still live a few blocks away from one of the main streets. So I would go down there and have coffee or go shopping. And neither of those it didn't feel good. And I noticed that, okay, this is happening. So that's when I started to schedule in some of those breaks, and those breaks were personal. I guess it was both intentional and necessary, so I shouldn't take much credit for it.
But I think having that awareness, because I think the equivalent now might be, I was just talking to a client about this the other day, and she said, you know, when I have a break, I start scrolling on my phone, and that feels easy, but it doesn't feel good. You know, and so I think we all fall into that trap of, you kind of know your body is telling you or your mind, like, I need a little bit of a break. But it's like, I think finding something to do that feels like a break that also leaves you feeling good, right? Where you're not just mindlessly scrolling or spending money. And what I see is, for many people, their lives have been so work focused that it's hard to even identify the hobbies or leisure activities that might feel good to do in that moment. That's not just scrolling.
Right. I've always kept a research log. And with my second sabbatical, I also just started writing down what I enjoyed and what I didn't enjoy about the day. And that really helped to identify. And I still do that.
Yeah.
And it could be, you know, just 2 or 3 words. That's all I need.
I'm curious about how as you think about the arc of your day or your week, do you have a sense of how many hours you're devoting to work versus not work? Are you still working kind of full time or part time? Like,
I think I'm working probably more than full time, but I feel more energized. One of the things I do on all my sabbaticals, and this was even from the first one, is I avoid some of the inconveniences of life. So I don't travel during rush hour. I avoid it as much as possible. And if I have to run an errand, even if I'm walking, I will go to the store or have my appointments, you know, not right at the beginning of the day and right not at the end of the day.
It sounds like during the sabbatical, if you're able to rearrange things and focus on what is energizing versus what's draining, then even if you're not cutting back significantly the hours you're working, it sounds like it's a choice to use it for work as opposed to a drudgery, like, oh, I have to get this done. Is that accurate?
I would say so. And I think there's also, I feel time is different. So when I do what I think of as low-level tasks at work, for example, I would have a podcast running in the background, but I would still be answering emails or, you know, trying to read something at the same time. And specifically with this sabbatical, I have tried not to multitask, even for tasks that I could multitask with. So the time feels quite expansive. and generous in that respect, and far more calming, frankly.
Yeah, I bet that does feel different. It sounds like there's more intention to your days, even if some of the activities are the same as during a normal work day.
Yes, intention and awareness.
Yeah. The other thing I'm curious about is it sounds like this sabbatical, you mentioned that part of your personal project is to figure out, you know, should you retire and what you would want to do in retirement. But then your research is also career focused.
Yes.
So is your research dovetailing with your personal sabbatical goal?
Well, some of that is happenstance in that I had planned the sabbatical and then there were some changes in my life, some positive, some negative, which means it would be easier for me to retire now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. But I think also in terms of thinking about, you know, the decision being an either or, you know, the question is, if I go back, I want to build a work routine that is far more satisfying. And we do tend to think explicitly of early career and sometimes mid-career, but we don't think much about late career other than succession planning and pre-retirement planning. But there's actually very little on how to make that portion of your retirement enjoyable. And that struck
yeah.
me. That struck me as a gap. So we've been using words like intention. So I wanted to bring the same intentionality that I brought to my early career.
Yeah, I think that makes so much sense. And there's thinking about both your work routines, but then your off-ramp as you wind down your career seems really important and like something people don't talk about, right? Like you said, we focus a lot on, okay, early career scholars, how do we get people through those first 6 or 7 years and into tenure? But then it's kind of like, once you get there, well, good luck. And it can be really hard to change patterns that have become deeply ingrained.
I think we also have a pretty negative view of late career. You know, we call people deadwood, or in some of the HR literature, late career is actually called job decline, which I find incredibly insulting and sad, just really sad.
Right. As if people aren't still motivated and being productive, which at least in academia, I think many of the academics I know,
right.
I think, how are they still going at that pace?
Right, right.
At that point in their career, I find it very admirable, but also I do find myself as someone who's mid-career thinking already, you know I don't want to do what I did in my early career because that was not sustainable. It led to burnout. I'm feeling good about where I am now, but then I know that the nature of my job might change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I, it can be hard to think about what do I want my career to look like in 10 or 15 years?
Right.
Because like you said, there's not, people aren't necessarily talking about that. What I tend to see is people move into administrative roles and get really busy.
Yeah, I do see that. I also see people building depth. So for mm-hmm. people who don't go into administration, they build depth. Or the other thing I hear from faculty often is, and this is often when they're in their last 3 to 5 years, they say, well, I'm finally going to do what I always wanted to do since I don't have to chase the next grant. And I think thinking about that, you know, 3 to 5 year range is I think, particularly useful.
So as someone who has had now a wealth of sabbatical experience, I would love if you could offer some nuggets of wisdom for people who are thinking about their first sabbatical. Sometimes folks have a pre-tenure sabbatical or that first post-tenure sabbatical. What are some of the most important things that you think people should be thinking about as they begin to think about or plan their sabbatical?
I do think that starting with the personal, having sort of a sense of what I should do in terms of whether you're going for promotion or whether you're going for tenure, having that, and then thinking about how do I achieve that while also approaching my personal goals and having personal goals. I do think the monitoring of how your sabbatical is going and whether it's making you happier and whether you're getting things done is important. Thinking about how you actually want to feel when you get back to work and whether you want to use the sabbatical topic to reframe your everyday work or reposition yourself in the institution to reach out to a different set of collaborators, thinking about what you want to take into your work life. So one of my sabbaticals, my second sabbatical, I would start my day by reading broadly. So not the material that was directly on my sabbatical topic, but the works within information science, which interested me. And I continue to do that on my daily commute in the morning. And that has made a huge difference in my mood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that, starting habits that you carry forward. So sabbatical doesn't become this isolated moment where everything was great and then you go back to work and everything is not great again or not as good as it was, but thinking intentionally about, are there habits or practices that you want to start to develop during sabbatical? You just do it automatically.
I think also sabbaticals are times of trying on new behavior. So I've tried to learn more through audio this year, which is not my natural inclination. One sabbatical I had as a task to get better at reading technical documentation. Mm-hmm. So having what I would consider not research goals, but professional goals.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and something I love about this, what you've shared about the sabbatical you're on currently, that I think is helpful for folks to remember, is sometimes you think, well, the sabbatical has to have these really clear products, or, you know, my professional goals and my personal goals, I always need to have an output. But for you personally, this process of using sabbatical to think about retirement, what is that going to look like? When will that happen? I think sabbaticals can be inflection points where maybe the product or the outcome is that you've made a decision about the next direction of your research, or you Right. have identified new collaborators. I think sometimes we want to rush and do everything, but maybe the sabbatical is just putting the preliminary wheels in motion, right? And it's not actually getting the grant for the new research topic. It's just reading widely and figuring out what will the next research topic be. It can be easy to forget that spending time thinking, spending time reading, those are very productive too, and can really help shape the next phase of your career.
Right. I think the biggest thing I've learned is that I've had to rejig my research agenda or my research plan every single time for all three sabbaticals. And the first two was actually just because I realized that there was a gap in the plan. This one was because of personal reasons, family reasons. And I was thinking back to this. The first one, there was angst and self-blame. The second time, there was angst, but no self-blame, or very little. And this time, I just rolled with it. And I think we, because we don't have the strictures of work, we assume we will have far greater control than we do generally in life. So yes. I think you have to be prepared for that, and just kind of, if you can assume that that's going to happen, it goes a lot smoother. I find sabbaticals to be quite immersive. And so I find that when I have time away, so my vacations have to be very immersive also in order to disconnect, to stop thinking about the research, which is probably
great to me. I appreciate your comments about being able to adjust and adapt, because I do think, I mean, I'm someone who loves a plan. I love being in control, but I have learned, especially, you know, during the pandemic, that was a big example of just things being out of your control and having to adapt. And then for several years after that, we had a lot going on in our lives that just really did not align with my desire to tightly control everything. And as I think about sabbatical planning, there's this balance, because I do want people to go into it with intention and having a good plan, having thought things out. But then alongside that, you also need to be ready to be flexible and pivot. And like you said, reflection, ongoing reflection is important, and being able to notice, this actually isn't working. What I thought I would want to do during my sabbatical, or something has come up in my personal life and I can't do the things that I thought I would do. And so it's so important to be able to not get into that, you know, anxiety and self-blame you described from your first sabbatical, and to be able to say, okay, this happened and I can change, I can adapt.
Right. I think one of the dangers of sabbatical is that there can be an inclination to self-blame because you no longer have university policy or your colleague or, you know, your large class size to blame.
Yeah.
So you need to be conscious of guarding against it.
Well, and I think we often put a lot of pressure on sabbaticals, right? Because if you're someone who's been overworked and burned out and you think sabbatical is going to solve all my problems and you put so much store in it, then the minute something doesn't go as planned, it can feel catastrophic. I think sabbaticals are amazing. And also we can't rely on sabbaticals as a cure-all or a panacea for sort of bad habits that aren't serving us. So they're not magic.
Right.
Well, Raya, it's been so great to hear about your sabbaticals. And I think you've shared such important insight that, you know, you've learned from experience. And I just love hearing how the rhythms and routines of your different your sabbaticals varied. I always like to remind people there's no one way to take a sabbatical. And I really like these examples of how your sabbaticals were different because you were in different phases of life and caregiving during each one of them. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your insight. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. And I do want to say that part of my sabbatical joy, this sabbatical, has been your podcast. So thank you for making it.
Well, that is so flattering. And I'm happy that I've been able to be part of your sabbatical. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Sabbatical 101. If you found it helpful and want to hear more, please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. I'd also love it if you'd share my podcast with a friend or colleague who might be interested. If you'd like to connect to talk about my sabbatical coaching programs or to purchase an online asynchronous program, check out my website, www.bethanywilinski.com, or click the link in the show notes. You can also check out my blog, free resources, and subscribe to my monthly Sabbatical Insights newsletter. Until next time, here's to life-changing sabbaticals.